Episode number 24 of the podcast is brought to you by First Row Collectibles. Head over to firstrow.ca and use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping on your order today. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards, definitely the best boil and bite mouthguard I've ever had. Head on over to sisuguard.com and use the promo code FNP10 to save 10% on your order today.
Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Frank Allen.
It's Tuesday, July 3rd. Biggest week in MMA all year. Couple great interviews lined up for you. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Episode number 24 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. So like I said, it's definitely the biggest week in MMA all year. You've got UFC 226 on Saturday night. And then I had a little poll out there on Twitter. And most people after 226 are most interested in the Ultimate Fighter Season 27 finale. That's on Friday. You've also got one championship battle for the heavens, and that's on Saturday. And it sounds like somebody's either going straight up to heaven or they might win a belt. That sounds sad. And then we've also got PFL regular season number 3, which is on Thursday. And I mean, it's going under the radar for a lot of people. I think there might have been one or two people on Twitter that voted for that, and they're going to be paying attention to it. And it's kind of a shame because there's some notable names competing on that card. You've got Jake Shields as the headliner, which a lot of people would definitely recognize. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time on it today. I'm just going to go over it briefly, give you a bit of an idea. But like I said from the start, we've got a couple of great interviews in the podcast. We're joined by Evil Eddie from My MMA News and the Pure Evil MMA podcast. We're going to cover the Ultimate Fighter Season 27 finale, preview a little bit of UFC 226 and pick his brain a little bit. And have an overall conversation about what he's got going on with his podcast. He's got a lot of guests over there and really chugging along over at Pure Evil MMA. And then we're also joined by a guy who competed on Dana White's Looking for a Fight Season 2. And he owns Nostos MMA and Conditioning Gym over in Southampton, New Hampshire, Mr. Devin Powell. And we're going to talk about, you know, what it's like to be a coach and run a gym at the same time as competing in the UFC. I mean, he's really stretched thin and he's got a lot of stuff going on for himself, and hopefully we're able to see him compete in the UFC coming up here soon. So let's just get right into the interview with Devin.
Yes, sir. But anyway, no, I really appreciate you coming on. I was actually at the NEF event there a couple weeks ago, and you definitely had a lot of fighters there. How did you get involved? I mean, you're a coach, instructor, you own the gym there at Nostos. How did you get involved with owning the gym?
So I used to work at a passport center and train full-time and fight. And then I was training at a place called the Shop MMA in Somersworth, and I was training where I had my black belt at Fort City Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And the mixed martial arts gym that I was training at was at a kind of a crossroads where I was thinking about either closing up shop or switching it over, trying to find somebody else to take the spot and make their own thing, and that's kind of the option that I heard and I wanted to jump on. So my friend Bill Jones gave me the opportunity. I took it over. We closed down for a couple of weeks. I renovated it, and then made a new academy, new name and everything. Everything was brand new. But that's kind of how it worked. I worked at the Passport Center 40 hours a week, and then would come in and train and teach at night. And then I would bounce on the weekends, and I taught jiu-jitsu for a preparatory school in Danvers as well for that first year. And then slowly I was able to start leaving some of the other jobs at the Passport Center. I stopped bouncing. I recently stopped working at the school in Danvers. So now I'm just teaching, training, and fighting.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. Like, you definitely have a lot going on. It's got to be tough trying to balance all that stuff. You know, a lot of people probably recognize you from being on that season 2 episode of Dana White's Looking for a Fight. What was it like? I mean, the whole experience. I know they called that one card. It was NEF Looking for a Fight, and everybody kind of knew what the situation was going to be. Dana was going to be in town. But what was it like for you? Like, did you have any idea there was a contract on the line?
Yeah, so for me, what happened was I had taken a bunch of fights in a row. I fought like 4 times in 6 months or so, and I was pretty beat up, like incredibly beat up. And I fought and won the NEF title at 55, and then I was already scheduled to take another fight for World Series of Fighting. And I was too beat up at that point to even like bend down and touch my toes, but I wasn't going to drop out of either of those fights. I fought both. Thankfully, I won both of them. And then after all that was over, I told myself I was going to take at least a full month to do nothing, rest my back, and just try and, like, coach, not train, and recover my body. Because at the end of the day, if your body doesn't work, it doesn't matter what kind of mentality you have. You need to have the body to perform. But I got a call when I was at a concert just hanging out, relaxing, drinking. And I was told that somebody pulled out of the Dana White Looking for a Fight card. And that they needed a opponent for someone at 155, and it was 3-week notice. So I obviously had to say yes to the opportunity. So I hopped on, got the job done, and then here we are now.
Yeah,
it was definitely surreal fighting in front of Dana. It was crazy, but you know, it was, at the end of the day, it was just another fight. Once you're in there, I wasn't thinking about them. I was thinking about the guy trying to kill me. So.
Yeah, I mean, you had a broken nose in the fight, ended up getting the first round finish, and the rest is history. I mean, you got the contract, injuries obviously healed up, had a couple more fights in the UFC there. And a lot of people, again, I mean, they saw your name on the Looking for a Fight show, and then they also saw your name again this past spring. Are all the injuries healed up from that?
From when the Dana White show, where I tore my knee in that fight too. I had to rehab that, and the second I finished rehabbing, it was pretty much... I was rehabbing it still while I was in my first fight camp, to be honest. So like, it was not like it was, I still can feel it a little tiny bit here and there. It was torn LCL, but it just feels a little different than my other knee. I mean, for the most part, that's, you know, I'm pretty good on that. The back is, you know, every day I try and do certain things to help recover my back and be healthier. The UFC Performance Institute, I was just at training, and they have a phenomenal team for everything, you know, strength and conditioning and physical therapy, and helping me with therapy and exercises to do to prevent these injuries and to heal them. So all of that's definitely been better.
Yeah, it's definitely good. And as far as like the lows on injuries concerned, is that all healed up?
Yeah, that's healed. You know, I had to take probably a full month off.
Yeah.
Of like hard training, but I was, as quick as I was allowed to, I was back to like hitting pads, being light on my, be careful not being heavy footed, you know, just doing what I needed to do. But once I was let loose, I was right back to full training.
So yeah, I mean, I've seen on Twitter, you've been trying to kind of campaign Looking for a Fight. You know, it was a close one in your last one with Horcher. Split decision loss, they can always, you know, go either way. And by the metrics, I mean, you posted a picture, but if you really look into it, it was a pretty damn close fight. Idea what's next for you in the UFC? I mean, I know in October we've got this UFC Moncton card. I'm sure you were as surprised as I was that we're going to get a card. Is there a possibility you end up on that? What's that?
Where is it in October again?
It's in Moncton, New Brunswick.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a 2-hour drive from where I am in Fredericton. It's probably, 6.5 hours from where you are. Is there any chance you're on that card or any of the upcoming UFC cards?
Yeah, that's the plan. You know, I've been fighting every day, posting as much, tagging as many people as I can. You know, I'm in a tough position because I'm in the most stacked division. I'm sure a lot of people say that, but I think just by numbers, I think it's the most populated division in the whole UFC. So it's tough getting fights. You know, you're only supposed to get 3 in a year, because it's so hard to even get you those. And then some people that are on a roll, they deserve to stay in the the eye of the world, because they need the superstars, you know, they need to sell the cards. So they don't really, you know, you need a reason that they want you on the cards. There's guys that are like great fighters that get cut even with decent records in the UFC because they don't pull. It's tough, you know, so I try and do as much as I can to post and be involved with social media and stuff. And but yeah, all I can do is continuously post and tell people to share statuses and stuff, you know, because it's, I'm putting in the work, but, you know, that's not always going to get you your fight. So I think that I'm really close, you know, we're just kind of waiting on everything to surface right now.
Yeah, awesome. I'm sure that that fight will come up here soon. And I really wanted to thank you for coming on. Good luck with the gym. Where can people find you online?
So you can find me on Instagram, Facebook. I think I'm pretty much maxed out on my Facebook friends. I think you can only have 5,000. But Instagram, I'm on there. It's just Devin Powell and then _ Nostos MMA, which is the academy I own. I'm sure if you just search Devin Powell, you'll find the little blue symbol and you'll find me. And then on Twitter, which is definitely my weak point. I'm not really good at Twitter yet, but I'm working on it. It's just Devin Powell MMA, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, add Devin Powell MMA. Just check, make sure. But yeah, those are the main ones, you know, Facebook. You can try and get on there. I have to delete people here and there because their stuff is just negative. And then, you know, every once in a while I'll get new people on there. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks so much for coming on. And at the next NEF event in September, I'll have to come over and introduce myself.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely some good things on the rise, though, for me, I think. I'm sure that you'll hear stuff not too long. Fingers crossed. And then you might be willing to call me back.
All right, thanks so much, man.
All right, anytime. Take care.
See you later.
All right, it was awesome having Devin on the podcast. I really appreciate him coming on. You can definitely catch him at the Nostos gym there in New Hampshire, and as well hopefully we'll be able to see him fighting in the UFC again. I mean, a really exciting younger guy, New England native. And just before we get into our interview with Evil Eddie, I'd like to thank my sponsors. So I'm brought to you today by First Row Collectibles. You can head on over to their website. It's firstrow.ca. Use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. I mean, I'm on the website right now. Aaron Judge, minor league card from 2016. That's pretty cool. They've also got Ally Frady autographs. I'm looking at an Art Howe autographed Pirates card from the old 70s when they had the cooler hats. And you got a ton of Washington Capitals cards, you know, Stanley Cup winners from this year. And there's all sorts of stuff over at First Row if you head on over there. And like I said, use the promo code FNP at checkout for free shipping. And to our American listeners, keep in mind that the prices on the site are in Canadian dollars. So you're going to be saving roughly 25% by ordering from First Row. And that's firstrow.ca, promo code FNP at checkout. We're also brought to you today by Sisu Mouth Guards. I mean, I've had a Sisu mouth guard for a number of years now. If you listen to Devin Powell's interview with MMA Fighting when Ariel was still there, he kind of told a story that, you know, he had a ruptured testicle and now he always makes sure that he wears his cup. Well, I'm kind of in the same boat. Always wore my mouth guard. The one time I didn't wear it in a hockey game, I lost my front tooth. And now I advise everyone to wear mouth guards when they play hockey. So, Sisu, you know, they're proud to announce that from June of this year to June of next year, they're a proud partner of Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation, which is a national childhood cancer research foundation. And every yellow mouth guard that they sell, whether it's an Aero or Junior style, that's going to result in a 10% donation to the foundation. So you can still use the promo code FNP10. You'll save 10% off at sisuguard.com. But you're also going to be they're going to be donating 10% of the proceeds to Alex's Lemonade Stand Foundation. So definitely check out Sisu Mouth Guards. All right, so like Bruce Buffer said in the opening, it's time. It's time for my interview with Evil Eddie from the Pure Evil MMA podcast. We broke down the Ultimate Fighter Season 27 finale, and we previewed UFC 226 and talked about some of the news that's going on in MMA right now. It's a great time to be an MMA fan. So here's my interview with Eddie. Why don't we jump into what you got going on. I mean, you're with My MMA News. You're the host of the Pure Evil MMA podcast. I've listened to quite a number of episodes over the last few weeks. You seem to churn out. Geez, how many podcasts a week do you end up doing?
Well, geez. So it's kind of different. I've been having a lot of my listeners ask me to do more live streams, kind of branch out into the YouTube world.
Yep.
Which, you know, if you listen to the show, you know that, you know, the podcast is on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, now on Spotify, which I'm really happy about. I got on there. But you know what I've realized over the years is that the more content that you're going to put out, the more people are going to stumble upon it. You know what I mean? Like, you can make one episode a week, which is good, which is where I started.
Yep.
But in between that, you got to do so much promotion, so many little things. And I was like, you know, since I'm doing all those little things throughout the week to promote that one episode, why don't I just do more content? Why don't I just put more longer content out that people want to see? Because, you know, if you're on YouTube and you look at your, like, how long people watch your show, like, usually I get a couple thousand downloads a month on the podcast, but if I flip over to the YouTube channel, it breaks it down in a whole different way where people are, you know, watching for just 2 minutes and they'll flip over to something else unless they're, you know, rooted into what I'm discussing. So there's a lot of different ways to go about, you know, making content in, if you're a podcaster, because we're so lucky this day and age. I talk about it all the time. When I was a kid, we didn't have any of these platforms. I mean, you look at, you know, the Audi era, and you see some of the publicists from that era and the excitement that they were going through. Those were like the ESPN guys, the top dogs at the time. Now that I'm going to these shows like Bellator, or going to cover UFC or even local like CES fights, you're seeing all different people from the olive tree and the MMA scene, even branching outside. But you know what the one thing that really bothers me, and I'll get back into your original question, is, you know, when the arrow going to ESPN, I've had some weird issues with ESPN over the years. I went to broadcasting school here in Connecticut. I went to one of the best broadcasting schools in America or in the world, called the Connecticut School of Broadcasting. You had Stephanie McMahon go there. You've had numerous people go there, and I've been trained by all the guys from ESPN. The guys actually created ESPN. Now, in school, they told us, they're like, don't work for ESPN. And immediately, I'm like, wait, what? Why wouldn't I want to work for the number one organization in sports entertainment that's only 40 minutes away from my house?
Yeah.
And they're like, you know what? They go through so many people. They're really, like, Errol going over there, I don't know if it's a good idea, because they go through so many different shows from time to time. Errol's a great person for a sport that, you know, people can look up to. He's always coming through with great news and always reliable. But at the same time, ESPN kind of makes me worry. And you have other guys over there like Brett Okamoto. But let me share an experience I recently had at Bellator 194. You know, I was sitting close to ESPN. I was like sitting next to one of the ESPN guys. And he was bad-mouthing our sport, man. Like sitting there, bad-mouthing Bellator, bad-mouthing our sport. And to see how, you know, like I was just saying, people from the olive branch all around, people who only have like, you know, 30, 40 followers on Twitter, but yet they're putting all this work on our sport to promote it and make it look good. But yet you have these guys at ESPN, the big dogs, the one where people are actually going to see talking bad about the sport. It really rubbed me the wrong way, and it motivated me to realize that, wow, these sports fans out there, they need content from people who actually care and love the sport. And that's really my mission. It isn't about how many shows I'm doing a week. It's about what I'm seeing and processing in front of my camera. I mean, this sport, man, it's one of the fastest growing sports out of baseball, football, basketball, whatever you have out there. I mean, listen, I grew up playing baseball, basketball, football. I was on the football, high school football team as the captain. I was on all the all-star baseball teams. I don't watch baseball or football anymore. I only pay attention to MMA. So your question was, you know, how many shows I do a week. It really comes to, you know, how excited I am throughout the week. So you're going to see that throughout my content. And sometimes it's, you know, two podcasts. Sometimes it's three. But at the end of the day, you know, I can talk all day about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's awesome for me.
It's fun to talk about.
It's awesome for me because I'll check iTunes and I'll see, you know, you've uploaded a podcast. I'll listen to it. And then, geez, there's another one right there. And you're always putting out great content. You've always got great guests on. And congratulations for getting on Spotify, because that's kind of a tough one to get involved in. I mean, even The Fighter and The Kid, they just recently got on there, and they're a pretty major podcast in general. So Congrats there. As far as ESPN goes, like you said, I really hope that Ariel and Chael going with ESPN. I mean, I know Chael's got his own thing with Podcast One. He's also still associated with Bellator, but two big names in the MMA sphere. And hopefully they're able to push out some mainstream content and grow the brand a little bit more. That would be great. I'm in the same boat as you. I'm trying to put out, you know, quality content. And my main focus is to try and inform and try and, I want listeners to take something away from what they listen to from me and translate that over to Fight Night. I mean, I get into this, you know, not doing it professionally. Like you said, I mean, playing sports all the way up through, big baseball fan, big hockey fan. And then I was always an MMA fan. And once I get into this professionally, geez, I haven't looked back. I mean, I went to a couple Red Sox games last weekend. And, I was a guy that knew the stats on every team and every player on every team. And geez, I couldn't tell you that anymore. So, totally. Yeah. Like totally engulfed in this, and I enjoy it more than anything else. And the takeaway for our fans is hopefully they're able to learn something every podcast.
Well, here's the thing, man. I hear a lot of people talking about it, and being in the scene for so long for this, man. I mean, in case your listeners don't know, I did my first actual live on air interview when I was only 7 years old with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and that's how Jeez. I really got into, you know, kind of dream. About, man, if I could do anything, that's what I want to do. And I get to live it now, man. I get to talk to all these big stars. But you know what? You're saying, like, I have all these great guests on, but some of my favorite conversations come through some of the uprising prospects that we're seeing. And now with Dana White's in the contender series, that's on the table. It's opening so many new doors for fans to be like, oh, that guy's from my area. And you can literally just get in your car and go see them at the next event if they don't get signed to UFC. Between having all these guests on, like, I've been recently having on a lot of these Ultimate Fighter guys. Yep. I've had on. I did a show with James McSweeney from season 10 with Shaw vs. Rampage, but to see throughout the years how this show's evolved and the fan growth that kind of outgrow the Ultimate Fighter and kind of, you know, more dipping into the actual sport. The thing is, with all these guys that have coming on and we have International Fight Week, the one thing that really excites me is to see something blossom in front of your eyes, like a young fighter's career that you got to watch this entire season of Ultimate Fighter. Even if you're not a fan for years and years, if you just watch one season and you find one fighter on that season that you really enjoy to watch, you know, you finally get to see them bloom when it comes to the finale show. And I'm really excited this week because that's what we're about to witness between Joe Giannetti or Luis Pena, who I just recently had on, who's going to be fighting Conor McGregor's boy, Richie Smolin, and how it just festers in our heads. I mean, it's a very exciting time in mixed martial arts right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely very fortunate to have CES close by and have those cards. Greg Ribello there competing on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series last week. And I was going to bring that up. So you just had Luis Pena on, what, last week? 4-0 as a pro, taking on 3-0-1 Richie Smolin. And, three of Smolin's wins are all by finish. And then the draw is to Rice McKee, who just lost his lightweight title last Thursday to Terry Brazier and Bama. And I cover Bama a little bit, but, I mean, that's a huge matchup right there. I think that's going to draw a lot of fans. And I think if Luis Pena is able to get the win and he's able to win by finish, that'll just, his stock will be so high. And I think he'll be a mainstream fan favorite, kind of like a Sugar Sean O'Malley. But the Ultimate Fighter, a great season this year. And if you and me want to go in, you know, maybe 50-50, and if we've got $5 million between us, we could buy that Ultimate Fighter house.
You know what, man? I've heard so many good stories about the Ultimate Fighter house. It's really sad that we're going to be playing it the rest. I wonder what's going to happen. I want to see where they now, the Ultimate Fighter house, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
That would be funny. Like the Jersey Shore house. Where's the Jersey Shore house? Where's the Ultimate Fighter house now in 5 years? You know what I mean? Like, who's going to be owning that? We've seen so many good moments happen at the house, going all the way back to that season that Nate Diaz was on with my buddy Robert Emerson, where they saw two hot girls in the backyard and were like, they're riding a horse. I'm like, oh, come to the house. The fighters are trying to, you know, these guys are trapped in the house. They don't get any good sight between girls, that way. So they invite this horse and walk in that cobblestone driveway, and the horse almost dies. I mean, there's been Katja, who recently retired this week, man. I mean, there's just been so many great memories that have happened in there. I wouldn't mind buying that house one day. I would literally love to just even do a tour there, just kind of seeing, you know, you were just talking about Lewis coming on the show, and he was telling me, he was like, man, that scene where I was pissed and kind of got into a little fight with Simon Makatran,
yeah.
He was like, the only reason that was is because, you know, one of the coaches on that team was like, you know, he's been in the house before so many times that he knows what's the good room, what's the best side of the house. And Lewis was a little upset about that. I mean, once you get there and you're settled in, you're going to start realizing, like, man, I have to stay here for the next 6 weeks. I got to be comfortable. And it looks like I got the shit end of the deal, though. So it was really funny to see the fighters this season. It's going to be sad watching, you know, the Ultimate Fighter close out.
Yeah, I mean, Bellator's got a lot of money with the new DAZN deal, so maybe they could end up buying it. They've talked about doing an Ultimate Fighter series over in the UK, so maybe they start one up in the States. Who knows?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they have that platform on Spike or Paramount, as it's known now. I wouldn't be surprised because that's where the Ultimate Fighter was born. If you have to remember, the last season of the Ultimate Fighter was actually on Spike. It was the season with Michael Bisping versus my good friend Mayhem Miller, who I had to close with. About 2 years now. I don't know where Mayhem has been, so don't ask me. But yeah, that was the last season there. It would be nice to see a little comeback, even if they have it on UFC Fight Pass or Bellator, or buys it out or does something neat with it. But like you were just talking about, let's jump into International Fight Week, man, because I can't contain myself with what we have in store this weekend. Between, you know, Luis Pena and Richie Smolin, like you were just saying, and that fight, my quick prediction. Let's see here. Like you said, if Lewis has a great performance, it's going to stick with a lot of people, so you can only hope for that. But also, you have to remember that this guy's training at SBG. Like you were saying, he's a very feared guy at the upcoming prospects. He also has a lot of weight on his shoulder, which could have tied into, you know, the stress of that cramp that we saw this season, which I asked Rosendo about. Rosendo, DC's coach, and he was like, man, I've never seen anything like that ever happen before. But you know what? He cannot let that happen when it comes down to UFC camera time and coming onto the big show, stepping inside the octagon. I mean, even if you have a cramp, man, you gotta make it to that cage. And if I could take a guess, because you have to remember, Lewis also had a sprained ankle or something that took him out of the season. I have to keep that in mind. So if I don't know if we're gonna see 100% Lewis Pena, but I will tell you this. You know, it's hard making predictions when you talk to these guys. So I really don't like doing it, but if you look at some of the odds, I don't even think that's going to do it. I mean, you have to realize what it comes down to is, you know, after all that's said and done, the skills that these guys hold, it comes down to how they hold themselves up during these big performances when they walk out and they smell Vaseline, beer, and chicken, and screaming fans either rooting for you or booing against you. How do you feel a moment? And we've even seen a lot of big-name guys crossover from other big organizations that can't handle that big time, you know, the likes. We've seen it time after time. So I think Lewis, out of, you know, Smolin and Lewis, if you have to say, I think Lewis is more of the guy to rise to the occasion. So I keep your eye on that. And if you watch his Instagram story, you keep up with his Twitter page, man, his energy is just through the roof, the excitement. Like, you can feel that vibe, that exciting vibe, the guys that you want to see. Like, when Derek Jeter was on his first year on the Yankees, I mean, it's just this exciting time in MMA, and Lewis Pena is holding that energy currently. And yeah. I'm very excited to see what happens there. Also, you have Israel Adesanya going up against Brad Tavares in the main event. That fight in itself is drawing two different paths from two guys. I mean, Brad Tavares, if you look at his career, I mean, just kind of taking a step back from the harder competition that he's fought in, you know, back in 2013 through the years. But at the same time, I think that was a smart decision now for Israel Adesanya, who's making a big step forward in my book here, to go up against Brad Tavares. I think he has a chance here. But it's going to be the biggest fight on his entire career, and it's going to come down to this. We've seen numerous guys before in the past have that exciting upcoming. Look at Lando Venata when he came in up against
Tony Ferguson.
When he came up against Tony Ferguson, and how he just starts him in the first round. Tony was able to finish the fight, but the excitement that came from Lando Venata and how it just died out so quickly with just one loss.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be very careful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited about this main event. Like you said, Brad Tavares has fought some great competition. I see this playing out actually in Tavares' favor. You know, you watch Adesanya's last fight. You know, his distance management isn't quite there yet. I'd almost compare him to a guy like a Neil Magny, who has so much range and reach, but he doesn't quite understand how to use it all that well. Just like Stefan Struve. They're kind of, I mean, Struve's on the lower end, Magny kind of in the middle, but Adesanya's got that knockout power, but he doesn't quite understand it just yet. And Brad Tavares is a veteran. He's been around the block. In his last fight there, he just recently fought Elias Theodoru, and Elias is one of those death by a thousand cuts type fighter. He never seems to win by finish. He's point fighting, almost like not really like a GSP, but I guess they both train at TriStar. They both train at TriStar. But I don't...
Everyone knows it.
Yeah, I don't see Israel winning this fight. I mean, he's... Unless Brad Tavares went for a knockdown, he was able to throw a flying knee, you know, or a takedown, rather. But yeah, I can't see this one playing out Adesanya's way.
You know what? Adesanya undefeated, so you have to remember he has that confidence.
Yep.
Maybe this, if he does lose, it would be what he needs. I mean, sometimes a loss actually ends up helping fighters. And you got to remember, Brad Tavares is in the top 10 of that division. That's a big jump up. A lot of guys were very surprised about this matchup. Even Brad Tavares was tweeting with me saying, I forgot what he said exactly, but I think he was even surprised when this matchup came up and how many people are rooting for Israel. Israel has a great upcoming career. He's 13-0. 17-5. Like you just said, Elias Theodoro, he's a very great fighter. He's kind of a point fighter, and he would love to get that rematch back. But right now, Brad Tavares, man, he can definitely prove himself. You know, and it's not like this win's going to really do anything for Brad's career besides just kind of staple that he is a top contender, he is a top 10, and that these upcoming guys that everybody's putting their energy and time into, they don't deserve it as much as the top 10 guys that aren't getting the credit that they deserve and the time that they're putting in. Just because it's not putting on good interviews or they're not going in there and putting on flashy performances, when they're in the top 10 of the UFC, it's very hard to get away with those spinning backfists or whatever that's flashy. And then I'd be very surprised if Sugar Shane O'Malley can continue that within his career, because he's kind of that flashy guy. You know what I mean? So I think Israel is going to really have to step outside here against Brad Tavares, and it's definitely going to be a tough matchup. I'm interested to see what happens there. That's going to be the main event, and the day after, man, we have a very exciting entire card for UFC 226. But before we jump into that, a couple quick fights that stand out on International Fight Week for the Top 27 finale. Easily, I'm sure the guys are pumped to see Rachel Ostis back in there going against Bella Rosa. You know, she's just easy eye candy, but a lot of people, they forget how great her ground game is. So that's another exciting fight. Also, Matt versus Peterson, that's going to be starting the night off, the second fight of the night. Keep an eye on my local boy, Matt Bastetman. He is one of the top guys around this region here on the East Coast. And then you have Roxy versus Barb, two veteran female fighters. If you've been following MMA, especially women's MMA, these are two girls that you know. Right off the bat, and it's going to be an exciting fight. I'm probably leaning towards Barb in that fight, but Roxy, man, you got to give her the credit where it's due. Those are the fights that are sticking out on that card as we move forward. How about you, though?
I mean, I agree with you. For me, I think actually one of the most interesting fights is probably the Bruce Leroy fight, Alex Caceres, and he's taken on 11-1 Martin Bravo. I mean, Bravo lost his last fight against Humberto Bandinet, and I mean, he lost it quick. I think it was 26 seconds, first round head kick knockout. But I mean, Caceres, he's got kind of a salty record if you just look at that. I mean, he's 3-6 in his last 9, but he does have wins over Cole Miller, Sergio Pettis, and the Canadian Roland Delorme. So I think it'll be a good fight. I mean, Caceres is one of those guys, like you said, Sugar Sean, he could have an issue, you know, later on with the spinning attacks and whatnot. Now Caceres is kind of wild, but it should be a good fight for the fans. I mean, Matt Bissett, like you said, New England's own. When I sat at UFC 220, I was up in the nosebleeds, and I had a Bissett crowd around me. Family, friends, whoever it was, they were really rooting hard for him. And I mean, Steven Peterson, 16-7. I mean, he lost his UFC debut to Brandon Davis, and that's a tough one. Brandon Davis is a gamer. But, you know, Matt Bissette, you gotta keep your eyes on him for sure. And then to me, I mean, other than the main event, probably the most interesting fight is Topgolf's own Cuban Missile Crisis, Julian Marquez and Alessio. I mean, that's going to be a great fight. 16 combined finishes between them, and it's going to be just fireworks.
And you know what, guys? I'm going to be doing my prediction show as well. I do that for every UFC event. I also do a recap show directly after that main event goes down. And this week, there's going to be a lot to talk about. So make sure you guys subscribe on the Pure Evil MMA, each of them, and iTunes, Podbean, wherever. I'll send you the link that you can put at the bottom of this description, man. And
for sure.
That's only the first night. That's only the first night that we're in for. And then the day, I mean, this is literally Christmas for MMA fans. I mean, I look forward to this every year. Finally, we can unwind and see some of the talented fighters in front of us. But you know what's going to be weird? Next year, we're not going to have the Ultimate Fighter finale for the first time in 20 years almost. I think that's a little crazy. What are we going to set up for? It's probably going to be like a Dana White contender finale. Like, I don't know what they have in store, but I'm definitely very upset that this is going to be the last finale card. So keep that in mind as we watch, because this is going to go down the history books. Hopefully, if everything goes smooth, then for an MMA fan, you know that the MMA gods, they usually strike against that. So everything really has to align for a good card. And you know what? There hasn't been many standout cards this year at all. I mean, there has been some somewhere back in my mind, but if you think about it, what comes first to mind when you think about MMA in 2018? Probably Conor McGregor throwing a dolly through a bus window.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a standout fight.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, like there haven't been a lot of consistent cards. They've thrown out a lot of fight nights that haven't really been all that. You know, I think of, you know, kind of close to you, I guess, but the Utica card. I mean, when it was time for the main event, that was a huge fight, and it looked like it was half full, which was very surprising to me. I mean, a card in upstate New York, you'd think everyone would come out and support it, but there weren't too many people there. I mean, you had a relatively hometown type of guy. You had Gregor Gillespie and Jimmy Rivera, and the numbers weren't quite there. You had UFC Chile, which wasn't much of a hit. You had UFC Liverpool, which wasn't much of a hit. So they're kind of in a tough spot, I think, and we're kind of in a weird spot for them, for the UFC going into the ESPN Plus deal. But at the same time, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but with Bellator going into the DAZN deal, you went a month between Bellator 200 and Bellator 201. Now on, it's the 13th and the 14th, you have Bellator 202 and 203. If you go onto Bellator's website right now, they have three fights listed for Bellator 203. If you head on over to Tapology, there's six fights listed. And both Freer brothers want to fight on the card. Only Patricio's on the card right now. Patricky wants on. It might not happen. They've been bad-mouthing the company. They've been calling out fighters for PED use. I mean, it's a tough scene there. But all things seem to be leading to September 29th, once that DAZN deal kicks in. You've got your welterweight Grand Prix, which is another strange thing because one of the main fighters in that is former champion Andrei Korshkov's actually fighting him.
He beat Benson Henderson on his debut.
Yeah, and he's fighting at Bellator 203, which is in July. So, I mean, unless they want to set him up in September or later on in the welterweight Grand Prix, but it's nice that they're finally giving Korshkov a fight because he hasn't fought in getting close to a year and he's been demanding fights. I've seen other fighters such as Alexander Shlemenko and another name that I brought up podcast over podcast, Vadim Nemkov, who beat Liam McGarry and totally, I mean, just annihilated him, brutalized his front leg. But Bellator, they're kind of in an odd spot too. You know, this DAZN deal, it's a 9-figure deal. We're going to see bigger fights, supposed to be 7 stack cards per year. But the UFC and Bellator, they're both kind of in strange spots. A lot of money being thrown around. And with International Fight Week, it's definitely exciting for MMA fans for sure.
Well, listen, I mean, since you're talking about that 9-figure deal that they're doing, it kind of makes me worry, especially with UFC doing the ESPN, or really it's ESPN Plus deal is what it is. Which, like I said, it's making me worry for reasons being, you're going to have to pay for that platform to watch. What's one of the reasons why, when we started this interview, you were saying that you love baseball, you love basketball, football. I was saying the same thing. Why do we love that? Because it was free content for us to watch, and it was because our parents were into it. I mean, this new generation coming up, they don't have money to watch, to pay for ESPN Plus and watch it on their phone or whatever. it just kind of worries me. I mean, with the direction's going with the future, I understand that the online platform's there, but to charge people for it, definitely, I don't know how I feel about that. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. But for me, it's really the diehards that are going to be purchasing that, and that's not really branching out or spreading out. So I think there's some red flags coming up there. But Bellator, man, they're coming into their own as well in the last couple of years. Yeah, there are some things that they definitely need to fix. One being not broadcasting live.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing, especially when we're having an event overseas, and the people overseas can't even watch it live, but they'll watch it a week later. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Or they'll be live here on the East Coast, but yet on the West Coast, it's not live. Like, yeah. That's a huge issue. People don't want to know what the results are. They want to watch it live and fresh, and that's one of the reasons why the Ultimate Fighter's leaving, is because that element is kind of missing there, where, you know, that fight that you're watching isn't live action. The results already happened. So that's another thing. But Bellator, I think, is doing a great job. I think they're getting more recognition. They're picking up a great roster, which is really the number one focus. They need a great roster to get people to want to tune in. And now, I think that they're starting to understand that the way that things are working is, if, you know, if UFC doesn't have a card that weekend, let's try to slip a card in there. Let's kind of plan against the UFC instead of, you know, having cards the same night. I think that that's going to definitely help Bellator. But if we look forward to, you know, that ESPN Plus deal with UFC and Bellator with their deal, I mean, it's good for them, but at the same time, bad for them at the same time. What are your thoughts? Do you think it's going to, you know, push them forward, or is it going to move back? Because Bellator, the one thing that's keeping them back for the live stream is because they're on the Paramount platform. And like you said, they're going to be able to get some more cards out there, but who's going to want to purchase every month to see Bellator cards, really?
So, yeah, I mean, I had Andy Nesbitt and I had Ty O'Keefe on Friday. Andy kind of talked about what Bellator is doing, what direction they're going, heading into the fall. Ty and I spoke about his article where we've noticed, and he's noticed, that the ratings have gone down, you know, bit by bit since Scott Coker kind of came in. His first year, the ratings went up slightly, then they plateaued, and now they've started to go down. One of the issues that they have is the fact that you have, you know, tape delay, which I feel like, and I commented on Reddit actually today, I've seen that I think the way the Bellator does things with Paramount is that their slot's kind of set in stone more or less. So whether it's a Friday or a Saturday night, they've got the Prime TV slot at 9 o'clock Eastern, and you get to watch, let's say, I don't know, make up a number, Bellator 300. And it's coming live from the UK, live for the fans there, but on tape delay in North America. Well, that sets off all the fans. I mean, if you go on Twitter, you can see all the results. So they gear it up, Paramount Network does, so that it's a Prime TV spot. So they think that the viewership's going to be there from the casual fan, but everybody's already irked that the results are online, and it's a complete waste. So with the DAZN deal, hopefully we'll be able to watch live Bellator coverage, and that's what they promised us. So hopefully we get that. With ESPN, the ESPN Plus deal is exclusive to the United States. So internationally and in Canada especially, we're kind of up in limbo. I emailed back and forth with the PR team last week, and they told me definitely no way it's coming to Canada. So whether or not we get it on our version of ESPN with TSN, and we're able to watch everything on there, which I kind of doubt, because, I mean, you've got your Fight Pass prelims, for instance. You have to have Fight Pass to watch that. Then your prelims are on television, and if it's pay-per-view, you know, you pay for it. But in Canada and internationally, we're kind of stuck in limbo with the ESPN Plus deal. I'm a little nervous about that. I'm sure they'll work out the kinks eventually. But as far as Bellator is concerned, there's this large influx of money. I just don't know if the talent's there to back it. I mean, 7 stack cards per year. The UFC has a hard time with 7 totally stacked cards per year. So for Bellator, I'm not sure where the talent's going to come from. I mean, you could draw from KSW, from ONE, from ACB. You know, some of the guys maybe that didn't win on Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. We've seen guys from the Contender Series that lose, they come back on later on in the season or the next year. So there's an opportunity for Bellator there. It's just going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out. And at the same time, before we get into 226, I mean, you had mentioned it a little bit, but there's been a lot of retirements lately. One of the guys that kind of jumps out in my mind is Johnny Hendricks. I mean, he's kind of peaked in his career for sure, and he's had a rough go lately, but maybe that could be somebody later on down the road once he kind of gets stuck in retirement and he wants to go out and do something. Maybe he ends up signing it with Bellator. But yeah, you've had Michael Bisping, Johnny Hendricks, Rashad Evans, a lot of guys calling it quits. So just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, originally my thought on it was, you know, with USADA coming in, you're going to see a lot of guys kind of slip out of the scene. Or it could be with Rashad, you know, he's had an amazing career, like you said. He didn't look like he belonged in the octagon in his last fight. And I'm going to have, me and James kind of spoke about this, because James McSweeney from Ultimate Fighter Season 10, he was in Rashad's corner for Forrest Griffin's fight. He was, you know, in his camp before they were even on Ultimate Fighter with Brendan Schaub. They both, you know, Rashad made Brendan Schaub and McSweeney's career by bringing him over from, you know, the gym out in Colorado to the Ultimate Fighter house. And, you know, Rashad's done a lot of good in his career. He's had such an amazing career. And it's kind of sad to see him later on. I mean, when he has a great job at the FS1 doing commentary or journalism or whatever he's doing over there on the desk, he's doing a great job there. He doesn't necessarily need to step in there and fight. But the other thing is, maybe it was the end of his contract, and you do see guys like Brad Pickett who say they retire, but then you make an appearance saying, oh, I'm coming out of retirement, I'm going to be fighting over at ACB. Now, here's the thing with Rashad. I don't think Rashad's going to do that, because we're seeing, as of late, like you were just talking about, Corey Scott. What do we see when Dustin Henderson made that decision? It's like, oh, I'll go over to Bellator. I'll do your competition. I'll hold that belt right again. Nope, not as you said as it sounds, man. Bellator has a lot of tough Russian dudes, a lot of great talent over there that doesn't really get recognition. So you are seeing bigger names go over to Bellator, but they're also having tougher matchups. Look at Gegard Mousasi. Look at Rory McDonough's last fight against my buddy Douglas Lima. I mean, it was not an easy fight, man. I had Diego on. He was like, man, I don't think Rory will ever take the fight ever again after what my brother put him through. But it's not as easy as it sounds. Rashad, I don't know if he's going to be coming back to the game. But at the same time, he's left on so many good memories that I don't think he needs to return.
Yeah, I mean, good memories for sure. Some of the fighters that are over the hill that I don't think should be fighting, really. I'll be totally honest with you. Vanderlei Silva and Rampage 4. That fight doesn't make any sense. And then also in the news today, Tito Chuck 3. I mean, Chuck's up 2-0, and it's probably going to end 2-1. But at the same time, Vanderlei Silva's up 2-1. You already had your trilogy. What's the point? But Tito and Chuck, I mean, Tito did beat Chael Sonnen. It was a rough fight to watch. They kind of scrambled for position, and ultimately Tito got the submission win. But I mean, Chuck hasn't fought in years. And I mean, I did watch his interview with Ariel there, probably a month ago. And, you know, he spoke at length about the fight. He wanted the fight to happen. He seemed to have all his ducks in a row, and everything seemed to be fine. But at the same time, I mean, what is there to gain here? Your legacy's already set in stone. People already know Chuck Liddell for sure. I mean, he was on Big Brother too, so I don't really get that. But at the same time, one of the things for me is that there was talk that, you know, if De La Hoya is serious about MMA, he's going to start stepping on some toes. And I put a couple tweets out there, and I commented on Reddit as well. I think we're going to be able to see an expedited Zuffa boxing schedule come up here soon. I really think Dana White's going to start exploring that and signing some top, top talent.
It's really funny you said that, because I was literally just about to say that. Dana said he's about to make a real ballsy move, and, you know, he's pretty tight with Oscar De La Hoya, so I think they're in cahoots there, because, you know, Chuck's very close with Dana, obviously. I think Dana had a little helping hand to set this up, to kind of get a helping hand back, like, I rub your shoulders, you rub mine. With, you know, helping with the boxing scene there. Set something up for Zuffa boxing. But my last comment on retirement thing really quickly is just Johnny Hendricks, man. With all these guys that we're talking about, they're all in their later career. But Johnny Hendricks, as long as he's been in the game, the guy's only 33, 34 years old. I mean, he's really not that much older than I am right now. And he's put his body through a lot over the years. This is a guy who came over from the wrestling scene, found power in his hand, was starting to knock dudes out early on in his career. I mean, watching Johnny Hendricks early on in his career, man, me and my boy, it was so exciting. It's like, how we're talking about, you know, something a little different, but at the time, I mean, Johnny Hendricks was the guy to watch. It was a very, turning point in Johnny Unitas' career. You know, people can point at USADA and say, well, look, he's a changed man since then. I don't know if that's the issue, but, you know, or if it's, you know, younger talent coming up. But turning point in his career was the Wonder Boy fight, and we've never seen anybody do to Johnny Hendricks what Wonder Boy did. And it was just a very sad moment. Yeah, he's had a couple of wins since then, but not really the same Johnny Hendricks that we've been used to. He's not making weight. He's, you know, trying to change up his camps. It's just all tough for him. So I don't know what's next for Johnny Hendricks. It's sad to see him. And, but then again, I would not be surprised if Johnny Hendricks go over to Bellator. That son, I wouldn't be surprised because he's still young.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I saw. I saw his fight against Hector Lombard in Halifax last year, and his move up to middleweight. And then you look at his fight against Paulo Costa. I mean, they kind of threw him to the wolves there. But I think with some time off and some time to kind of reflect and do some more conditioning, and, you know, find a gym that suits him. He can stay in one state. He can stay with his family and train. I think a good training camp and a nice long recovery period might do him some good, and possibly we end up seeing him in Bellator. But like we'd said, it's a huge week this week. You got UFC 226 on Saturday. I mean, I'm looking at the card. It's totally stacked. Now you've got Paul Felder fighting at welterweight against Mike Perry. I mean, what more could you ask for? Paulo Costa also on the card, taking on Uriah Hall. There's a lot of great fights on here, and it's kind of a tough question to ask you and a tough spot to put you in, but what's the biggest fight that a casual fan who hasn't watched the UFC in a long time, what's the fight they should watch?
Derrick Lewis versus Francis Ngannou. No doubt.
That's my pick.
A fight that we've been waiting for so long, and it's on this card. Yeah, it's kind of being overshadowed because there's so many great fights on it.
Yep.
That is the fight that, you know, you have to watch. There's no way, if you were in front of your TV and you see those two dudes walking in the gate, there's no way you're not going to be like, everyone shut up, I have to watch. Like, it's one of those fights where I'm really interested to see if Derrick Lewis can get by Francis Ngannou or Francis Ngannou can get by Derrick Lewis, because both guys have that crazy knockout power. But at the same time, Derrick Lewis has kind of had a tougher road to get to where he's been. I mean, he's fought some of the tougher individuals. People can argue against that. I mean, Overeem, like, you know, Francis has gone through Overeem. He's gone through some of the tough talent. But he's had that loss against Stipe. Did that loss against Stipe kind of remake Francis Ngannou? Is he going to be a different kind of a fighter? But to this level, man, I mean, going up against Derrick Lewis, people are expecting straight haymakers to be fired there. I mean, there's going to be a knockout. Who's it going to be? I really don't know. But if I had to put $500 down, I'm going to probably feel safer with Derrick Lewis, honestly. Because if we look back at what Curtis Blaydes was able to do against Francis Ngannou, if you see what Stipe's been able to do against Francis Ngannou, I think Derrick Lewis can also do kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, Derrick Lewis is kind of more of an athlete as well. I mean, Derrick Lewis throws kicks and he mixes it up in there.
Man, I mean,
and we've seen him come back against adversity.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
The fight that he had against Travis Brown, where he got injured, and he came back in the later rounds and won that fight. Amazing performance by Derek.
I mean, Derrick Lewis in, you know, Donaire City, Halifax, where I was. Yeah, I mean, he got hurt by the kick to start off. He got hurt at the start of the second round. He was able to power through it and knock out Travis Brown. In his fight against Mark Hunt, obviously it didn't go his way, but he got injured in that fight. In his fight against Marcin Tybura, he faced adversity, and in the third round, he was able to get the knockout. But the guy's got cardio. He throws a lot of different things at you from weird angles. He'll throw kicks, high kicks. And in Ngannou, what we saw against Stipe was, he's got a gas tank problem. I mean, he's been out since January, but you definitely have to wonder. He was able to sculpt himself into, I mean, he was definitely an athlete, obviously, but he was able to sculpt himself, and he's got this knockout power. He's a great boxer, but at the same time, he burns it pretty quick. And I think if Derrick Lewis is able to kind of counter-strike, and if he's able to take the fight to the ground, I think Derrick Lewis is going to be able to win. And I've been thinking that for quite a while, and I'm definitely carrying it into this fight. Another one of the fights that I'm excited about. I mean, like I said, Hall and Costa, I think that's going to be a knockout. The Curtis Millender fight, Max Griffin, I think that's going to be a great one. But one of the names that some people, if you haven't watched UFC lately, if you missed the UFC Japan card, I think that former Glory kickboxer Gokhan Saki and Khalil Roundtree, that could either be a total bust or it could be one of the fights of the night.
Oh, that's going to be, there's no way that fight's not going to end in knockout. This is a fight that was supposed to happen months ago.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there was an injury that pulled him out, and Khalil Roundtree, man, that guy's a knockout artist, man. He does not want competition to take him down. This is a guy that will stand and bang with you, and for perfect opponent for somebody like Gokhan Saki, who just has those crazy, like when Gokhan Saki throws those punches, those haymakers, it's like he's throwing a curveball from his waist. Like, if you watch some of his fights, man, it's just unbelievable how quick this guy really is in that. And I think Khalil Roundtree has his hands full here. But then again, you know, MMA is very new to Gokhan Saki. He's only had two pro MMA fights. He's 1-1 right now. So, you know, it's kind of up in the air. There's going to be a lot of people interested to see what Gokhan Saki can do here. And he doesn't have a guy who's going to take him down. So you know it's going to be a Gokhan Saki fight, which is going to be standing and trading and big blows back and forth. If you watch Gokhan's last fight, man, he was in a lot of trouble. There was a lot of huge shots that he took. He almost dropped, and then he fires one back in the waist, knocking his opponent out. I mean, it was one of the best fights that year that went down, one of the best knockouts of the year. And to know that he's going to be returning against a guy that's going to allow him to stand and trade like that, that's got to sign him up. Another fight that you're just talking about, Mike Perry versus Paul Felder. I've had Paul on my show numerous times. He's a great guy. He has such an education in the sport, and I think that's what's going to make the difference in this fight. If you look back at Mike Perry's last fight, and you can say, yeah, he's grown in the past 2 years, but go back to the Alan Jovan fight. It was a real rising point for Mike Perry. Like, if he can get past Alan Jovan, he's going to get himself in the top 15 spot. But one thing that held him back was that fight IQ. Mike Perry was chasing around, just loading up on that one big shot, hoping that was going to come. Paul Felder has that same, very similar style to Alan Jovan when it comes to, you know, keeping distance and avoiding those big shots. And you know that it takes twice as much energy to throw a shot and miss as it would to throw a shot and land. That's going to be a huge thing to see if Mike Perry has got the education to take on another similar fighter where he's fell before in the past. So that's a very exciting fight if you're a Mike Perry fan. And if you're a Paul Felder fan, because Paul has an amazing story himself, you know, losing his father. And the past couple of years, he wears his father around his neck. If you guys see, when he walks out, he's going to be wearing a little necklace. That's his father right there on his chest. He keeps that very close to himself, and he's a very emotional fighter, but at the same time, man, you do not want to make this guy mad, and you do not want to be standing at him on the other side of the octagon. This could potentially be by the night, so watch out.
Yeah, and he's going to be pissed off after getting jumbled around fight to fight. I mean, he's supposed to fight at, what, 223? Now we're at 226. He's been thrown around. But Paul Felder, really cerebral fighter. He's a highlight artist as well, and a really smart guy. The fight IQ's there. He's a great commentator at the same time, which I'm sure that's got to add to it. I mean, guys that coach, guys that commentate, like a DC, he's gained such a big following, and he's obviously one of the greatest of all time, but I'm sure that has to help in some aspect. But yeah, I'm sure you're going to cover UFC 226 on your podcast at some point this week, so we'll leave that to you, and we'll be able to listen to it on your end as well. I'm going to have a podcast come out on Friday where I'll preview 226. Eddie, it was awesome to have you on. Where can people find you?
Well, really quick, before I do that, let me just give my prediction on your show real quick. You guys can come over and see my kind of full breakdown with James McSweeney tonight. I'll be releasing that podcast. But guys, DC versus Stipe, man, that's a very exciting fight. This is a super fight that, you know, even though these two guys get along inside that one turn inside the octagon, nothing else matters. Stipe Miocic has a chance to cement himself as one of the best heavyweights. And same with DC. I mean, you were just saying one of the greatest of all time. Maybe one of the greatest of all time. Yeah, if you have Stipe Miocic here, then I can consider that. But if you don't, then you're definitely one of the greatest. I spoke with Rosendo Sanchez, like I said, DC's coach, and I asked him the same question. I was like, how do you see this fight going? And he kind of laughed at me. Obviously, he's going for DC. But here's the thing. I don't see this fight going the distance. Rosendo said the same thing. I don't see this fight going the distance. I'm honestly going to pick DC, and I don't like making my picks when it's a day before. I kind of wait till the day of. Like, I wait till that day, because you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I like to see how, when they make the walkout or whatever, how the emotion feels. I like seeing and witnessing all that, because you can pick up a lot within the few hours before a fight, how the fight is feeling. I am going with Stipe to win this fight. Probably by KO. Honestly, even though he's the undefeated at heavyweight, and he's an amazing wrestler. His cardio is there. It's going to be an exciting fight. I don't see it going the distance. I see Stipe taking it probably in the fourth round, via third or fourth round, via KO. And last but not least, guys, you can find me on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, but you can find all my links at MyMMAnews.com. That's where I work for, MyMMAnews.com. We have some great guys over there like Damon Martin, James Lynch. The list goes on and on with top MMA media over there. So hop over there, or you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at Pure Evil MMA. You can follow that. Follow me on Twitter at EvilHunter-Echo. That's EVIL_ECCO. And it's very simple if you want to follow me on Instagram. It's just at Pure Evil MMA. Thank you so much for having me on today's show, Craig. It means a lot, man. I love coming on shows and talking MMA, you know, outside of my own element, outside the Pure Evil MMA studio. So I want to thank you so much for that. It means a lot. And guys, keep yourselves white knuckles till the end.
Man, it was really great having Eddie on, going over all the cards. There's so much excitement going into this weekend. I can't wait for it. So just before I let you go, like I said, I was going to give you a bit of a preview. PFL number 3 coming at you from it's GWU Smith Center in Washington, D.C. That's Thursday at 8 o'clock. If you got nothing going on Thursday, make sure you check out the card. Main event, Jake Shields, 32-9-1, taking on Ray Cooper the third. You've also got some familiar names like Rick Story, competed in the UFC, taking on Yuri Vilfort. There's some other ones, you know, John Howard's on the card, among others. So have a look at that. And like I said, that's on Thursday as well. I'll be back again on Friday. We're going to go over UFC 226. I've got some more great guests coming on. I mean, really exciting things going on right now with Fight Night Picks. I couldn't be more excited about the different directions we're going in right now. So I'll be back again on Friday, and we'll see you then.